Hey there, and thanks for venturing beyond the Rotunda, your Farmingdale Public Library podcast, where we often talk about literature, history, and community. But sometimes we answer questions like, in which cinematic universe would you like to live? I am your narrator, Kevin Schultz, and I've got a bad feeling about this. This is episode 13 of the Beyond the Rotunda podcast, a production of the Farmingdale Public Library, where we are more than just books. As always, I thank you for joining me for this month's episode, and I do hope you are all having a great summer, lounging on the beach or in the yard, maybe with a bowl of fresh fruit and a cold beverage by your side, and of course, Beyond the Rotunda, running through your earbuds. I will try to make it worth your while. For this episode, I had intended to interview writer and editor Rich Handley, H-A-N-D-L-E-Y, who has written licensed fiction for Planet of the Apes, Star Trek, and Star Wars. His work has appeared in over 160 books and publications from some of the most prominent sci-fi franchises, including Paramount, DC Comics, IDW, Dark Horse, Battlestar Galactica, Red Dwarf, Watchmen, and of course, Lucasfilms, just to name a few. He is the co-creator of the Magnetic Press Planet of the Apes role-playing game. He has written reference and lexicon books for Planet of the Apes, Back to the Future, and Watchmen. His anthology, Musings on Monsters, Observations on the World of Classic Horror, was nominated for the 2021 Rondo Book of the Year Award. He was one of the editors for Eagle Moss's Star Trek comics collection and for IDW's Eisner Award-winning Star Wars Classic Newspaper Clips collection. He also was an editor and essay contributor to the three Secord Star Wars anthologies, which explored the Star Wars trilogy movies, comics, and expanded universe. And I'm going to stop there, or this bio is going to become as long as a Star Wars opening crawl. But he would have been a great guest, right? Well, unfortunately, due to unforeseen circumstances, at the very last minute, Rich Handley had to cancel. We hope that everything is all right and turns out for the best. And I do encourage everyone to go check out Rich Handley's work, especially if you are a sci-fi fan. There's plenty to go around. So this episode is going to be a little different than what you're used to. You're going to hear a lot more of my voice, and hopefully I didn't just lose half my audience. What I'm going to do is sprinkle in a few different segments, and I hope you like them. So let's get right to it, and we'll start with a segment that you're used to. Let's check out our cover question. In which cinematic universe would you like to live? For me, this is an easy one. I have been a huge fan of the Star Wars universe ever since I was a very young boy, and I saw the original trilogy movies in the theater. I had made the action figures and the spaceships, so my imagination has already taken me into this universe many times over. And what's not to love? There are starships that travel through hyperspace with a multitude of unique planets and systems to travel to. There are lightsabers and force users, along with such a diverse collection of beings, from humans and Mandalorians, to Gungans and Wookiees, to Bith and whatever species Yoda is, and a whole host of others. And don't forget the droids. There are so many different droids. Everyone gets a droid. And if you land in the right era, you don't have to worry about those pesky Sith. I recommend the High Republic. Plus, I'm always cold. And the prospect of vacationing under the twin suns of Tatooine sounds absolutely glorious. So that's what's in my book. Let's find out what's in yours. Let's start off with Jennifer from Farmingdale, who says, I personally believe that living in a hobbit house in the Shire, eating all day, singing songs, and running around barefoot is the perfect life for me. Jennifer, that's a good one. The Lord of the Rings universe was also on my list, but it lost points for the barefoot thing. Next, we have Laura from Plainview, who writes, I would like to spin around the hills and sing songs like Maria from The Sound of Music. And since this is my fantasy, I get to sing as well as Julie Andrews. There was definitely some beautiful countryside in that part of Austria, and we all should be able to sing as well as Maria and the Von Trapp kids. Now we have Dolores from Farmingdale, who writes, I would choose to live in Austenland from Emma or Pride and Prejudice, but only if I could pick my station in life, because with my luck, I'd be the overworked servant living in the attic. Dolores, here's hoping you'll get more time to enjoy the beautiful countryside and less time working those fingers to the bone. We now have Kara from Texas, who writes, I want to live in the universe of the Princess Diaries because I want to experience all the benefits of being the Princess of Genovia, such as getting to date Chris Pine. Well, that was quite direct. I don't really have anything to add to that. Jack from Plainview says, I want to live in the North Pole because I love Christmas and I want to be friends with Santa Claus, just like in my favorite movie, Elf. Jack, the North Pole is too cold for me, but being friends with Santa Claus would be awesome. And finally, we have Anthony from Farmingdale who says, I want to play baseball with some of the greats in the Iowa cornfields from Field of Dreams, capping off the moment by playing catch with my dad. Anthony, even though I am not a big fan of the movie Field of Dreams, that would be such a wonderful moment to live out. As you can tell, I got quite a few responses this time around. Even though many were literary works before becoming cinematic works, but the sentiment still holds true. Next month's cover question will be, which historical figure would you like to hang out with for a day? Send your responses to beyondtherotunda@farmingdalelibrary.org or catch me on Facebook and Instagram. Now it is time for a new segment that I am calling Let's Get Personnel, where I will interview a staff member from right here at the Farmingdale Public Library. My first guest for this segment is someone you've heard me thank at the end of each and every one of my episodes. She is, among many other things, my editor, my coworker, and my friend, Natalie Karsavides. Natalie, thanks for venturing beyond the rotunda.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start off the bat by asking you our cover question. In what cinematic universe would you like to live?
I had to think about it, and I'm like so torn between so many movies that I love. Because like part of me wants to say Star Wars, but there are always like wars and battling going on, and
Right.
I'm like, that's not safe. And then the other part of me is like, the Shire. It's nice and comfy.
Right.
So I would say a toss-up between somewhere in the Star Wars world or the Shire in Lord of the Rings world.
That works. That works. Just so you know, I chose Star Wars. My wife chose a Shire. So, all
Oh,
right. So
fun.
let's get to know you a little bit better. Are you a born and raised New Yorker?
I am. I am. I am. I
And
am.
where have you lived?
I grew up in Massapequa for most of my life until I moved here to Farmingdale. I'm a, as they call, newbie Farmingdaler, even though I've been here for 25 years.
Let's see, I've been here now 35
So
years.
I think, yeah,
Yeah.
once you hit 30, maybe you consider like
Right.
a real Daler.
So how long have you been a librarian?
I graduated library school August of 1997. So old, like I called myself a Stone Age librarian because basically the internet was just becoming a thing my like last year of library school. It wasn't really around as much. So there was a lot of using books and microfilm and microfiche and all the fun involved in all the fun.
So about 28 years then at this
Has
point.
it been? Oh,
Yeah.
God.
I'm sorry. How long have you been here at Farmingdale?
I got hired right after Labor Day in 1998. So I'll be hitting, what, 27 years in September.
Very good. And how did your desire to become a librarian develop?
Oh, yeah, I had none. I not gonna lie. I didn't even know library school was a thing. I'm sorry, fellow librarians. I didn't know. I was getting my master's in English at my school, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I really didn't want to teach or profess. I didn't really want to work in publishing. I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing with myself. And somebody in one of my classes mentioned he had dropped out of the library school at CW Post to come to the master's in English. And I went, library school, what's that? And he's like, we've, and I'm like, there's a degree for that? And I was like, well, I spend all of my free time in a library. I'm always reading. Yeah, that sounds like it could work. And so the minute I graduated with my master's, May of 1995, and I started my second master's, August of 95. So I went straight back to back. Yeah, so really had, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be a librarian. It was like, yeah, why not? Yeah,
But it fits.
it worked out perfectly. I segued in and out of what kind of librarian I was going to be. I started out, ironically, in the archives world, and I was like, I don't want to do that. And then I decided I was going to be a special librarian, and I needed a job at one point when I was interning because you intern for free, and I was interning in the city, and it was very expensive. And I said, I need to pay for my train fare. So I got a part-time job at a library, a public library, and I just fell in love with public libraries. And part-time work until this job came along. I was hired as a youth services librarian, so I did programs for birth to 12th grade until I don't remember how long ago when I took over local history and then went back to the archives world. So I full circled.
So what's your official title here?
local history librarian, and I say slash archivist because I like to add that because I'd spent 2 years making it
We're going
happen.
to get to that. So, as a local historian, can you give us a fascinating local history story?
There's so many that rattle around in my head that it's hard to pick one, but I like the weird, quirky ones, if that makes sense. So it was in a program I did. I found out about this, a story of a husband and wife. They were throwing a party. She was outside talking to a friend about the husband had been troubled finding a job and financial stuff, and the husband had been drinking a little, and he brought out a shotgun and he shot off his wife's leg. And this happened, in the early 1920s, and it was insane. It was a whole court case. He spent some time in Sing Sing, and then when I looked up them later, they did divorce.
Of course.
And, but it was just those little, I like the big stories, but these little slice of life stories that you get about families or actual people is what I love the most.
That is fascinating. So you're well on your way to becoming a full-fledged archivist. My first,
I am a
so
full-fledged
you've
one.
accomplished
I'm
that.
done.
Congratulations.
Official paperwork. I mean, you can become a certified archivist, but it is an extremely difficult exam. You have to, I think the reading alone is like 8 pages long of books and articles you need to read to take the test. And it's not really, unless you work for the National Archives, nobody needs to be a certified archivist. So I'm like, I don't think I need to take that test. You can, once you get the certificate, you can use the title.
So you've said a couple of times, is it archivist or is it archivist?
I think it depends on who you ask.
Okay.
I say archivist, but I'm
Archivist.
sure people say archivist.
Yes, I tend to say archivists.
I don't know if there's a wrong way to say it. I just, I think either way works for me because it's archives, so it makes sense you say archivist, but I just
Right.
say archivist. So
So what does being an archivist entail?
basically you, I mean, in those bigger sense, the we're small little archives, but you get all these collections donated to you or part of your collection, and you have to actually go through everything that's in a box, and you have to write down all the bits and pieces of what's in that box, including, the measurements, the condition, all this kind of stuff. And you have to preserve it in a way that it can be used for future references. You create some sort of guide so people know that it exists. So you digitize it in some way, or you digitize the holdings in some way so people know that these collections actually exist. And then, yeah, you go about preserving all this very important information. And it could be including everything from textiles to ceramics to toys to the simple and the normal photographs and, books and papers, but it's glass plate or daguerreotypes. There's some stuff dates back, a cuneiform and all that. So,
Wow.
think of any museum, and that's kind of in that process, like the Declaration of Independence would be an archival
Right.
piece of paper.
Right.
And it's very preserved in a very specific, it's got to be in a very specific environment, it's very specific temperature, very specific humidity level, so it doesn't degrade.
What's the most fascinating thing you found working here with the archives?
So many things, but we have a bunch of cool deeds from the 1780s. I found minute meetings from all these different organizations, which I just think is neat. Just anything where it's somebody's handwriting, I just get a kick out of. Even in our yearbooks, somebody donated their own personal yearbook, so some the people's signatures in it and what they said to each other, especially using the vocabulary,
Right.
like "you are a swell guy" from the
Right.
20s. I like that. I like, again, it's, I think, the slice of life things. We had a family, they found these gorgeous family Bibles in their attic, and it had like the whole family tree inside of the other family that lived in that house.
Oh.
So I kind of like finding those things.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I know you've done some genealogy work.
Yes.
How'd you get involved in genealogy, and how's it helped with the patrons here?
I think it started with my own family. So my aunt has always kind of been the de facto family historian, at least on my mom's side of the family. So she's gathered all the names of who's who in my family and at least some birthdays and all that kind of thing. So I've kind of taken over that and I've expanded on it. So I've been kind of been the field, I'm not an official genealogist. I haven't done any classwork to be an official genealogist. I know a little bit. When I get stuck, I actually know a genealogist, so I ask her. And then so when we started doing it here, we had some people ask for help with some genealogy questions. And my go-to answer is, I will do my best. I make zero guarantees I'll find anything, but I will do what I can. So it just seemed part and parcel as part of the local history world that you do some genealogy stuff. So I teach classes on how to use websites or introduce them to various websites or basic genealogy information.
Okay.
Joy and a crushing defeat all the main
Right.
time, because you get stuck very quickly. There's a lot of brick walls in genealogy, and it's very, very frustrating.
You ever found any sort of like revelation when you're helping somebody out?
My favorite story is there was a woman, she was just trying to find out the cause of death, I think, for her great grandmother, I can't remember exactly which family member, and she was died in Ireland. And I said, okay. And she happened to know the place. So I kind of just Googled like that place, and I saw if there was a local library, and I emailed them and I said, hey, would you any know any sources for this? And they're like, why don't you try the local church? There's only one church in this town. And so I emailed the church and I said, would you happen to, and they was like, well, coincidentally, we just digitized all of them.
Oh, wow.
Here's the, like, within 2 days, they found the death certificate with the cause of death and emailed it to me. And this woman had been searching for months on this one thing, and I found it within a week. It
Wow.
was just, it wasn't like I was spectacular. It was just sheer unadulterated luck that I was able to find it.
Right place, right time.
Right place, right time. And it was still my favorite story.
So I understand you've been included in a book. Can you tell us about that?
So I just realized, because it was 11 years ago, the American Library Association annual conference, they have a conference every year. It was my first conference. And there was like a publisher was having some sort of gathering for the librarians. So my husband came with me. He just tagged along. And we were there, and there was a photographer, Kyle Cassidy. We're still friends on Facebook. Hi, Kyle. He was taking photographs of librarians for his photography book called "This Is What a Librarian Looks Like." And I have the basic Dewey Decimal Number for librarian tattooed on my arm. And he saw the tattoo, and he loved it. So he's like, "Would you be willing to be in the book?" And I was like, "Duh." And so I'm on page 77, and it's like such a kick to see it. I'm like, I'm in a book.
Do you have the book?
I own the book, and the library has the book, but
Nice.
they gave me my own personal copy.
Very nice.
Yeah. So I can just look at myself anytime I want to. And just recently, I wasn't able to go, but at this last, I reattended ALA again for the only the second time, because it was right here in Philadelphia. And he was having a meetup, and I just wasn't able to go because it
Oh,
conflicted with something else. But I was like, oh, but look at
that
that. Nice to say hi.
would have been cool. So you are in high demand at the moment.
Yes,
Not only
I
are you
feel like a
doing,
celebrity.
yes, not only are you doing this podcast, you also appeared on another podcast, the Long Island History Project,
Yes.
hosted by Chris Kretz.
Yes.
Tell us about that experience.
It was great. It was, I'm not gonna lie, weird, because I'm so used to, I do oral histories all the time here. I'm so used to being the one asking the questions. It was very strange being on the other end of the microphone and answering questions. I did just listen to it today because he posted it last night, and I was proud that I didn't sound like a complete idiot. And I sounded like I knew what I was doing. And he's just so great to talk to. He had references, and he just knows his stuff so well. It's a great podcast. He just deep dives into these really great nuggets of Long Island history. And it dates all the way back, I looked, I think, to like 2016, 2015. He's been doing it for a while. And I use it actually as ideas for we have a local history blog where I do blog posts on not just Farmingdale history. I kind of do Long Island history. So I always have an ongoing list of places as ideas. And so I've gone down the rabbit hole on his posts and like, oh, that might be a good place for me to do a post on that might be. So it's great. And it was fun. I was a little nervous again, because I'm not used to being on the other side, but it sounded good to me.
I can't wait to hear it myself.
Yeah.
Chris Kretz is going to be my next guest
You're gonna love it.
in our September
Yeah.
episode. We're going to talk about his podcast and some more Long Island history, and I'm really looking forward to it.
He knows a lot of stuff, so he's very good.
What are some of the other programs you're working on?
So I just started doing a new program. I call it Mischief and Mayhem, where I'm trying to like expand what people think of as lo of local history, not just the stories. So, as you know, since you do the true crime program here, true crime is big. So I cover historic crimes. So I actually covered the crime of the husband and wife, and the next I have another crime already to go, and I have a third one kind of working on. That will be, I think, become like a regular thing every few months. I'll run that, and then coming soon in the winter, I'm going to be doing one called Historic Hauntings. So we're going to kind of tap into the paranormal again, still using local history. So it'll be Long Island places, because I think there's a road that was always thought to be haunted, or houses, or that kind of thing with ghosts and hauntings and tap into the supernatural. So I'm always trying to find ways to make people think of a local history in a different way.
That one sounds very interesting. My wife and I might attend
That'd
that.
be fun.
So we have a bit of a Star Wars theme going on in this episode. So are you a fan?
Oh yeah, I've watched all the movies and most of the TV shows.
Okay. How's your fandom start?
I think I discovered, I started watch I watched the original three backwards. Because I
Oh.
guess I was like, because I was six when the first movie came out, so I only kind of discovered it when Empire came out.
Okay.
So I watched Empire first, then New Hope, then Jedi,
Okay.
which was a little confusing,
Right.
especially because I was like a kid. But then I fell in love with it from then, and I've watched every single movie since.
You have a favorite?
Rogue One slash Andor. There's
Okay,
this
okay.
I've rewatched Rogue One like three times now, and Andor was just utter genius in
Yeah.
storytelling. I mean, I don't know, was that Dave Filoni? I
I
don't
think
know.
so. I
If it
think
was,
so.
he's just, I mean, I've watched the Clone Wars animated series. I watched Rebels, which would be my second favorite.
Yeah, this was really good.
Rebels was just like Kanan. He is the Jedi, like,
Yep.
ugh, that everybody needs to be. I have like a little sticker of Chopper on my desk. A little
Yeah,
obsessed. So just, yeah, there's something about the way he handles Star Wars storytelling that's just beautiful. So I love all those. I think I've watched Rebels at least twice, all whatever season, seven or something.
do you have a favorite character?
I'm
Yeah.
always like with the robots.
Okay.
So I think, Chopper,
Right.
I just, there's, he's the most obnoxious,
Yep.
obnoxious, obnoxious robot, and I love him so much. I love BB-8. I love R2-D2. The people were fine, but I always had the love for like the, Darth Maul, like the people they didn't have a lot of. So Darth Maul, I loved, but he's getting his own animated series, and
I've
I'm
heard,
very
yeah.
excited about it.
Yes.
Just how he was in the Clone Wars, you just got some beautiful backstory about Darth Maul, and I loved every minute. And Ventress Asajj
Yep.
from she, they just did another little few episodes of with her in it,
Tales of the
just
Underground.
Tales of the
Yep.
Underground. And it was so great because I just love her so much. So it's never like the big characters everybody loves, because how do you not love the normal? But
Right.
I like the little that they make their impact somehow.
I was.
And of course the, Ewoks, because they are
Well, they're just
adorable.
adorable.
Yeah, I just wanted one because I was like 11, 12, and I'm like, I wanted you.
I was always a Boba Fett fan. And then I watched the Clone Wars and I fell in love with Ahsoka.
Yeah, right.
Just that's my all-time favorite character. Her arc development was amazing.
Her, and then the live action,
Yep.
just genius.
I can't wait for season two.
Rosario Dawson is an
Yep.
amazing Ahsoka, but yeah, her arc. And I liked the Boba Fett TV show. It gave you a little, I didn't love
I
it.
was a little disappointed by it, but I was happy that it was there.
Yeah, because they kind of made season two like Mandalorian,
Yes.
not Boba Fett. So I was a
Yes.
little disappointed, but you got to see some other favorites like Cad Bane, because I love him too. And just, it was cool to see some Boba Fett, because he, yeah.
Yeah.
And like how he survived, because you're like, how?
How? Right.
That's not possible.
They gave us a reason.
Exactly.
Have you ever read any of the books?
I have not, but I've been told I would really like, because I just liked the whole Ahsoka world, I would like the Thrawn books.
I haven't read those yet, but my brother did. He loves them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to read them in as much sort of chronological order as
Yeah.
I can. So I'm way away,
Yeah, there are
but
so many of them.
yes.
But I have not, I don't, I have not read any of the
Yeah.
books.
I'm in the High Republic right now.
Okay.
And it's like there's like three phases, there's something like 30 books. So I've read like 10. So
Yeah.
and I'm enjoying it. They're good. It's the whole new characters, but it's good. All right. So Natalie, it
Yes.
was great getting personnel with you. But we're not done.
Oh
Let's play a little page turner.
yeah, I love these games.
Some rapid fire.
Editing these games.
That's
And it's gonna be weird to edit myself.
right.
Bye. Like, oh, I didn't like what I said. Cut that out.
That.
Sorry, Kevin.
What is your favorite all-time book?
I don't have one because I have like a favorite for each kind of genre. Like, I have a favorite picture book. I have a favorite children's chapter book. I have a favorite like young adult
Okay.
romance, young adult science fiction book, young, adult. I have too many. It's like picking a favorite kid. You can't when you're a
Right.
librarian. And I'm sure there are librarians who have a favorite one book. Sometimes I'll get obsessed with a series for a while, and I'll do that. So I've had, when I'm reading them, made everybody I know read them.
Right.
So if I do fall in love with certain, like, so the last one that I fell in love with that way, and I was trying to tell everybody to read, was Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir.
Okay.
I'm still a little obsessed with that book. I saw the trailer for the movie, and I'm cautiously hopeful that it won't be destroyed. Because if they don't do Rocky right, there'll be violence. Because that the entire book, I was like, if something happens to Rocky, and my husband's like, who are you talking about? I'm like, don't it. If something happens to Rocky, I will throw this book across the room.
I'm gonna have to read
Yeah, it's so,
it.
so good. There was a little some of the, he's a science writer, so there was a little science that I was like a little lost on, but not too lost. It just the way he handles, I would totally read his other books, which I will get my hands on one of these days. I think he did The
The
Martian, his
Martian,
other
yeah.
book.
That one I read, yes.
Just he just makes you fall in love with the characters, even if one's not human. I don't want to spoil the plot of Hail Mary, but people haven't read it. But Rocky's the best. I love him so much. And so yeah, I might be still on the Project Hail Mary train, especially now
Okay.
that I saw the trailer for the movie. And they showed a little teeny bit of Rocky, and I'm like, got
There you
really
go. What are you reading right now?
I am reading Bringing Down the Duke, and I can't remember the author's name. So one of my go-to genres is romance, so it's
Okay.
a historical romance. I needed something like, because I just read some Malcolm, I just finished a Malcolm Gladwell book,
Okay.
and he always makes you think and gets you deep and heavy. I read Blink. And it was really, he's just such an amazing writer. But after I read something big and heavy, I need like a good love story. So picked up a romance.
Makes sense.
Romance is the best. I don't know how people denigrate them. How do you not love reading people falling in love
About
and
love,
have
yeah.
a happy story? And it's great.
Do you have a guilty pleasure?
I don't believe in guilty pleasures. I think if you like something, you should have no shame in liking it.
Oh, that's a great answer.
Yeah, I just think whatever. I'm and admittedly, and anybody will ask me, I'll say it, a raging nerd. And what I love what I love, and I don't, like I say, I love romance novels, and I'll say it aloud, and I love really nerdy, geeky things. I go to Comic-Con every year and I dress up. I don't care. It's what I love.
That's
So
great.
I don't believe in you should feel guilty in something you love. If you like a weird random TV show, go for it.
No, that's great. I've never heard that answer before. I love
Yeah.
it. Do you have a favorite food?
Kind of like everything. There's certain foods I just don't eat, but for whatever reason, I don't tend to we ain't we mostly steer to like Mexican, Mediterranean, those kind of flavors. It's kind of usually Indian, all that good stuff.
The spice.
All this, yeah, something
Yeah.
with like a little bit of something tends to be my wheelhouse of when I go out to eat. When I make it, I can't make it as good as them, so. But when I go out to eat, I'm like, let's go for one of those three things.
Right. What is your preference? Read the book first, then watch the movie? Watch the movie, then read the book, or does it not matter?
Read the book and then take a very long break and then watch the movie when I don't remember all the details of the book.
Very
If I
good.
watch it immediately after, I get way too mad. What the, you know, how they destroyed the book.
Right.
There's only one time. One book that I was like okay with the changes they made, and I because I read literally finished the book the morning I saw the movie.
Okay.
It was a Jurassic Park. It was the only
Oh.
time I didn't mind because the grandfather in the book, the kindly lovey
Right.
uncle, is awful in the he's a bad guy in the book,
Right.
and it didn't bother me that he was a good guy in the movie. And I think they changed Malcolm. I think he dies in the book, or they make it seem like he dies
Okay. Right.
and that he lived that. So the rest of it was just so the genius of the spectacularness of those dinosaurs. It I was like, I'm okay with this change. But usually, if I've watched it, like my husband, he's like, I will not watch a movie with you if you just read the book because all you do is yell. Because I'm like, they didn't do it right, and if you know, they didn't cast that right, and you know, so I have to have a nice big break, and then sometimes I'll just watch the movie and don't read the book,
Right.
and I'm like, that works for me too.
Yeah, I have a theory that whichever one you do first,
Yeah.
you have an issue with whatever you do second. So
And I know there's some people who really like for certain movies, they don't like the movie no matter what, and yeah, they're all fine on their own. Like I know some people, The Hunger Games, they chop all this stuff off. I was like, but it's still a really good movie. So just sometimes you gotta let some of the little stuff go. Like they can't put every single little detail. I remember the outrage when Lord of the Rings came out and Tom Bombadil wasn't in the movie. And I'm like, yes, I loved him and he was amazing. And I was a little like, you couldn't add him. That's like a 10-hour movie there, Peter Jackson. But it was such a good movie. And I was like, yeah, I'll get over it.
My wife boycotted the movie for a little bit because of that. But she got back though.
It's he doesn't he makes an impact, yes, but sometimes you it's hard when you're a book lover when they make a movie because you want everything in there, and when they remove something that you love, especially, you're like, oh, how dare they? Like you take it as a personal insult that they chopped off your character or whatever.
That ownership comes out.
Yeah, exactly. Because it becomes, when you read a book, it becomes yours. It's your book. It's not, the author's book. It's yours. And you fall in love with the character so much, especially if it's a book you love. I mean, I've hugged books after I finish reading them. Yeah, the one and only Ivan, I hugged hard. Books I've disliked, and I apologize. I've literally physically thrown across the room because it made me so mad because I didn't like it that much. I was like, well, I kind of hurled it across my bed. So not really across the room, just across my bed. It's like, this book stinks. Throw it. So, and you can. I always tell people, never ask a reader what their favorite book is, because they can talk about it. But if you ask them a book they hate, oh, they can go into detail on why how much they hate that book and why. And not because it's book a bad book, it just wasn't the book for them. Every book their reader. I'm like, I don't judge people on what they read, but there are books I just didn't like. Come on.
It happens.
And I have books I loved.
So you mentioned it. I know you have a few tattoos. Do
Yes.
you have a favorite?
I don't know. I guess I think you have this, but you always have the special place in your heart for your first one, even though it kind of doesn't exist anymore because I covered it up with a bigger version. It was like a little when I got it when I was like 23. My brother bought it for me for my birthday. And it was like a little tiny blue rose. And I really honestly had never plans on getting more than one. And then though I got a second one for my dad after he passed away. And then they kind of just started growing after that. So I blame my dad. Because then I have at least two more planned. So
Oh,
yeah,
really?
one.
They're in
Yeah, one
the
this year. I'm gonna get one. I had five fur children, three cats, and two dogs who are now no longer with them. So I'm gonna get something for them, for my babies.
Which leads right to my next question: dog person or cat person?
Both. I grew up only with dogs. I had a dog from when I was three. He was ginormous. He was part wolf, part husky, and he let us do everything to him. Like according to my mother, I don't remember it. We would sit on him and ride him like a horse. And he let us, so we didn't really get a cat until I was in high school. And he was a fine cat, but he was my mom's cat. He tolerated us. He was my mom's cat. The only time he started kind of being nice to me is when she started going on vacation and he realized I was feeding him.
Of course.
But then when I got my own house, got a dog. How did we do it? Dog, cat, dog. Accident cat. Like most of the animals were planned except our last one. She was like our accident cat. And then when they all passed, I was like, I don't know if I can do another dog anymore. They're a lot of work, especially when you're going on vacation. You have to board them, do this and do that. Whereas a cat, you're just like, I'm leaving for a week. You set them up and you have somebody just proof of life them, And so now we have. She'll be one next week. A baby's not a baby anymore, and I'm not okay with it. Little kitten who's just super spoiled, and I love her so much. So now I've become like a cat mom, but I still love dogs.
I'm a dog guy.
I mean, there's, yeah, dogs are great. I mean, it's my doggies. They're fun.
I don't have one now, but we're gonna get one soon.
They're so much fun. They are great.
So, what is the most asked question that you get as a librarian?
We have a most asked question beyond where the bathrooms are, you know, direction of like, where is this room? Where is it? Like directional question
Right.
then to be probably the most asked, or help on the computer or help with a copy machine issue. Most of the times, you know, they want to know if the latest whoever got a new book out is in. So it's not a, it's specific, but not to a specific person. So whoever's got a brand new book and it's a big author, you know, Patterson, Baldacci, Emily Henry, Colleen Hoover, is their book in, is usually the go-to. So they all want to read the their brand new book. And some of them, I don't know how they, I don't think they sleep because they pop out a book every, like the new one, Freda McFadden. I'm like, how many books have you read this month? Do you sleep? I just want to know if they sleep. Like, how are you writing so many books in so short a time? Just round them up.
What is your go-to recommendation when a patron is looking for something new to read?
Depends on what they like. See, I kind of try and determine what they're into. So I don't ask just about their reading tastes, because some people are like, oh, I haven't read in a really long time. I want to get back into reading. So then I ask them about the TV shows they watch, the movies they watch, the music they listen to, and I kind of give them what I think would be a good title. Or what was the last author they read that they really liked? And if I can't think of a title off my head, we do luckily have databases that we can go to get something similar. But there's usually, I usually have like one or two rattling in my head. I mean, it took me a while because, again, I was used services. So I would be like, I can recommend this great teen book for you. So I've had to start reading a lot more adult fiction that's not fantasy or romance or graphic novel, because those are usually my three adult choices. So now I'm kind of reading all outside my own comfort zone to be able to recommend more books to people, which has been interesting. I found some books I really loved, and some of them I'm like, no, not right for me. I'll still recommend them, but they're just not my cup of tea. Cozy stuff is.
Do you read multiple books at one time?
I sometimes, not as much anymore. I used to. I mean, when I was getting my English master's, I was taking four classes at a time. So I was reading four things for my classes and then my own personal reading. And I don't know how I kept them all straight. Now, as I'm getting older, if I have a nonfiction and a fiction book sometimes, but most of the times now I'll just read one book at a time.
I was always a one book person, then I started working here, and now I'm reading like two or three at a time, and I'm getting better at
It's a little
it.
rough, if, especially if they're kind of in the same genre.
Yes.
If they're completely different genres, like if I have a fantasy and a romance, I can kind of keep track of which is
Right.
where. But if they're both fan, I can't read like two fantasies at the same time or two romances. I'd get them too mixed up.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for that next fledgling group of librarians?
Just love people. You have to really like being around people, because it's a just day-to-day people job. So you have to be okay with talking to people. You have to be okay with all sorts of people. So you're gonna get all walks of life. And so you and just, you know, obviously read. You should read as a librarian. Most of us all do, you know, in one form, shape, or another, but we, you know, we're always reading something. It doesn't have to be books. I mean, there's some people who are just really deep into the nitty-gritty of these those big think pieces, articles, and essays. So as long as you're reading and know who the big authors are, you'll be fine. And just, you know, patience, because people can be challenging or can be amazing. I mean, there's not, there's usually, at usually have at least, if not one, if not more, one of those, like, you walk away and you're like kind of skipping because it was just such an amazing interaction you had for whatever reason. Like, it could be something simple. The other day I was helping, it was a mom, she had her two kids, and she just wanted to be shown where a certain section of books were. So I walked them down, and the little girl just took my hand and walked me all the way down, holding my hand,
Oh,
and like,
that's
we became new
nice.
besties. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like trying not to, like, so cute while this little girl's holding my hand. But it was so adorable that she's like, okay, I'm gonna just take your hand to a stranger and walk with you.
You may have just answered my final question. What's your favorite thing about being a librarian?
All that, yeah. I mean, I had, when I was a kid, I mean, all my library babies are now older and married, and it's really depressing because in my head they're like still babies. But I had a slew of, I called them my boyfriends. They were like two, three, And I saw my boyfriend today. I just found a new one. He's a little baby boy and he's so cute and he's been in the library too. And I'm like, hello, my boyfriend. And he just smiles at me and I'm just like, oh. So you're, and you have always, every library has the regulars who come in all the time. And it's always a joy talking to them because it's always just fun. You know them, you've known them for years. So you just chat, catch up, see what's going on. Like half the time, they don't even looking for a book. They just want to say hi. They know where to go.
They just want the interaction,
They just want
yeah.
the interaction, and it's great. I love it. So yeah, it's all that. It's those fun, and then when you get the right, like my one of my favorite memories is it was a mom, teenage boy. They're not big readers. Some of them are. So I don't want to generalize. But this one was on, and I gave him the series. I really wish I remember which series. Probably I'm going to go with Ranger's Apprentice because it's usually one of my go-to YA, younger YA series. And she called me from like the bookstore to get more recommendations, titles, because he just loved it so much. Like just when you turn somebody who doesn't like reading into at least a reader for at least one book, and they, tell you so. They come back, or the mom comes back and tells you so. That there's nothing more like that when you just, you've helped somebody and they let you know how much they appreciate it.
That's
So
gratifying, yeah.
it's so gratifying. It's so amazing when you get to the whatever they want in genealogy, local history, whatever. If you can find them the answer, it's the best.
Well, this was the best. I
Good.
thank you for being
Venturing in the
so
rotunda.
for venturing into the rotunda.
Walking
and
together.
yeah, so thank you for being so insightful, so informative, and thanks for venturing beyond the rotunda.
Thank you for having me.
That was without a doubt the least rapid-fire page turner we've ever done, but it was still a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed getting personnel with librarian Natalie, and now that you know her a little bit better, stop on in and say hi. Let's turn the page to our final segment of the day, my pros and cons review of the 2012 Star Wars novel by James Luceno, Darth Plagueis. In episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, Chancellor Palpatine asks Anakin Skywalker, "Did you ever hear of the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?" And just like that, Sith Lord Darth Plagueis became part of Star Wars canon. James Luceno produces a well-researched and highly informative storyline around the rise of this Sith Lord and the grooming of his apprentice, Darth Sidious. He attempts to address several of the questions that arose in the prequel trilogy, such as, what is the Trade Federation and why are they blockading Naboo? What are midichlorians? How does Palpatine keep his identity as a Sith Lord a secret for so long? How is Anakin conceived through the Force without a father? Why did Sifo Dyas commission a clone army from Kamino? And what is Count Dooku's story? This novel is a complex political story which showcases the early stages of the Galactic Republic's decline through the point of view of the Sith, while still maintaining all the classic Star Wars elements. Space travel, force wielding, lightsaber battles, and the diverse planetary systems. It can get a bit convoluted. There were times when I needed to read passages a second time to fully comprehend the impact. But aside from that, if you are a Star Wars fan and are looking to expand the universe, I recommend Darth Plagueis. It is currently still considered part of Legends, and we'll have to see just how much of it creeps into canon. The paperback runs about 465 pages, and the audiobook, which is narrated by Daniel Davis, has a runtime of approximately 14 hours and 45 minutes. And so that is my pros and cons review of Darth Plagueis by James Luceno. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Beyond the Rotunda. I thank Natalie Corsavides for being the very first guest on the Let's Get Personnel segment. And now that you've heard from her here, go check out her appearance on the Long Island History Project podcast, hosted by Chris Kretz, who, incidentally, will be my next guest, if all goes according to plan, next month. And we will talk about some of the rich history from Long Island. I thank Natalie and Brendan for helping me put this episode together. I thank Maxiel for our theme music. And I thank all of you for continuing to listen. Until next time, be well and enjoy wandering the stacks.